Hi, I'm Carla Wainwright.
And I'm Little Leah.
And welcome to the Radical Sex Witches podcast, where we explore the themes of sexuality, feminism, consciousness, love, healing, ritual, magic, and all things witchy and wonderful.
Hello, all you gorgeous ghouls, and welcome to another episode of the Radical Sex Witches. Kind of excited about today's topic so much that I'm not even introducing myself. Little Leah, over here is Carla Wainwright. You know us. We're the lippy bitches of the podcast world. What?
It's true. I just have to throw one thing in, though, before we start. Happy International Women's Day. You're an amazing rock star of a woman, and I'm so privileged to know you and get to work with you. I love you.
I love you, and you're a badass bitch too. But by the time that this airs, it's going to be like 2 weeks
ago.
But you know what? Isn't it still like International Women's Month in addition to the day?
Maybe.
I was out with friends a couple weeks ago or last week, and it was like a trivia night at a restaurant. And they were like, "What's this month?" And I was like, "Well, I know it, International Women's Day is on the 8th. And we're like, "But that's not a month." And then that was the answer: International Women's Month. So I guess I'm out of the loop. Happy International Women's Month to everyone that identifies as a woman out there.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, when you have a birthday and you make it your birthday month.
Okay. Okay, Leos, settle down. We're looking at you. But as I said, I'm pretty excited about this topic. We're going to fuck up a lot of the pronunciations of this. So please forgive us. If you know the proper pronunciations, you can correct us via email or DM on our IG. But did you ever notice how in the myths of yore, a surprising number of monsters and creatures were women? According to the classicist Debbie Felton, these villains all spoke to men's fear of women's destructive potential. The myths then, to a certain extent, fulfill a male fantasy of conquering and controlling the female. So we're here today to break down the bedtime stories the patriarchy tells itself, expose the expectations placed on women, and share some of the modern reimagining of some of the Western world's most monstrous women.
Mm-hmm. So we got monsters, history, myths, women, patriarchy smashing. I mean, seriously, on International Women's Day, I'm here for all of it.
Fuck yeah, me too.
Our exploration today, it's based on the work of Jess Zimmerman, and who wrote a book called Women and Other Monsters, Building a New Mythology. And she explores the myths of some of the most terrible Greek and Roman monsters with the hope that we can see the qualities that mark these female creatures as monstrous to ancient eyes might actually have been their greatest strengths instead. So big shout out to Jess Zimmerman for the inspiration for what we're about to share with you.
And to kick things off with names that I can't pronounce, we're going to start with Scylla and Charybdis. Charybdis? It's Charybdis. If you can say it better than me, I commend you. So as Homer's Odysseus and his men attempt to sail back home to Ithaca, they must pass through a narrow, perilous channel fraught with danger on both sides. So the Scylla is a six-headed, 12-legged creature with necks that extend to horrible lengths and wolf-like heads that snatch and eat unsuspecting sailors. Nom, 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 nom. And she resides in a cave. On the other side of the strait, the ocean monster Charybdis, rages and threatens to drown the entire ship. Homer describes Scylla as a monster with few human characteristics, but in the Ovid's retelling, written about 700 years later, Circe, in a jealous fit of rage, turns Scylla's legs into a writhing. Welcome to our fucking show. Mass of barking dogs. writhing, withering. Thank you for following along this far. But Zimmerman points out in her book that what makes Scylla horrifying in this version of the story is the contrast between her beautiful face and her monstrous nethers, a metaphor, she argues, for the disgust and fear with which male-dominated societies regard women's bodies when they behave in unruly ways. No shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how scary those nether regions are. They're dark and cavernous. And yeah,
scary. Smells different.
Smells different.
There's blood in there.
Yeah, seriously. All of those things.
Children come out screaming, "Let me out of the funhouse!"
Yeah, I find this really fascinating. Like the whole idea of what that can mean is just this unspoken fear about a woman's sex organs and her sexual power, mm-hmm. and making that as like this massive barking dogs like teeth and the underlying fear that represents, which makes a lot of sense to me.
But she's so pretty, I want to fuck her. The dilemma that they have, right?
Yep. All right. Next, we have Lamia. So Lamia is one of the lesser known demons in classical mythology. And some stories hold that Lamia has the body, upper body of a woman, but the lower half of a snake. So I actually, when I read her name, I was like, I don't know who that is. But then when I read the description of her, I'm like, oh, I have seen that, where the upper body is the woman and the lower half is a snake. And her name in ancient Greek translates roughly to rogue shark. There's tales that represent her as a woman with paws, scales, and male genitalia, or even as a swarm of multiple vampiric monsters. But regardless of whatever account you read, her primary vice is always the same, that she steals and eats children. So if you listen to the last podcast,
well, we're talking about baby sacrificing. Fuck them kids.
So Zimmerman says that Lamia represents a deep-seated fear about the threats that women pose in society as primary caregivers. And I feel like I actually forgot to put some of the story. There was some story that she had children, and then I think Zeus, like, he either murdered her children or something, and then she was so completely distraught. There's like some big whole Greek mythology thing where, yeah, I'm pretty sure like Zeus went around killing a whole bunch of people. So he killed her kids and she was so distraught. And I think she even like plucked her eyes out because she was so upset. In any case, it's a really horrible story. Mm-hmm. But what Zimmerman says is that she represents a deep-seated fear about the threats that women pose in society as primary caregivers. So women, on the one hand, are expected to care for children and be like this paragon of virtue. And at the same time, society is always worried that we're going to fail in our obligations to be mothers or nurturers in some way. Like, we might reject motherhood. We might be ambivalent about motherhood. We might love our child too much. We might love our child enough. And that all of these things are violations of some kind. And that's what she represents, like the fear that you won't be, as a woman, able to live up to the standards that society says women as nurturers should be. So to deviate in any way from prescribed motherhood as a narrative really makes you a monster and a destroyer of children.
So on one hand, we've already said that, like, you know, our nether regions are terrifying and we're just monsters. But on the other hand, we need to be nurturers of our potential future generations. Ah, yes. Fuck you, patriarchy. On Women's Day, you can go suck a fuck, misogyny. Even more than every other day. Next up, we're going to talk about someone that you have likely heard about, Medusa. She was a Gorgon, one of the three winged women with venomous snakes for hair, and anyone who looked her in the face turned to stone. Of the three, Medusa was the only mortal Gorgon. So in Ovid's telling, she was once a beautiful maiden, but after Poseidon, the god of the sea, raped her in the temple of Athena, the goddess sought revenge for what she viewed as an act of defilement. Rather than
just pause for a second. she viewed it as an act of defilement, not like that it was, because it sure was.
Yeah. Sorry, just needed sorry that I'm laughing. It's not funny, but this is, yes, when you put it like that. Anyways, rather than punishing Poseidon, Athena transformed his victim, Medusa, into a hideous monster. So the story here is that beauty, like monstrosity, is enthralling, enchanting, dangerous, and perhaps even fatal. And as the centuries progressed, Medusa's deceptive beauty became synonymous with the danger she posed, cementing the trope of a villainous seductress that endures to this day. And also worth noting, like most mythical monsters, Medusa meets her end at the hands of a male hero. Yeah, doesn't she get her head chopped off? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, what an example of the women's union here to an extreme. So yeah, here's this woman. I can't remember. I should have put what episode that was, but look it up if you're interested, if you haven't listened to it already, about the women's union. Here's a woman who was in a temple, raped. And this temple, Athena's temple, what did she do? She transformed the victim into a hideous monster. So instead of, you know, having her back and punishing Poseidon for raping her, she suffered numerous times. But we'll just say, like, she had the first experience of the rape. And then she was, for that transgression, which wasn't even hers, she ended up being transformed into a monster by another woman.
By another woman. And I mean, we see this shit every single fucking day out there still.
Yeah. But I just think, you know, that in itself must have had so much cultural impact, right? So rather than there being like compassion and empathy and support and righteous anger and revenge and all of those pieces, none of those pieces are in that story.
Well, you know what's funny? So we have mentioned this before. Previous to the endeavor of the Radical Sex Witches, we did the Embracing Shakti Temple. And each month we did highlight a brand new goddess or mythical woman of some sort. And all of them had really fucked up backstories like this. And they weren't the villains. They were like the heroines in the story. Yes. And they were like, you know, shunned by their father, raped by their father, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Or this one was a slut. You know, we've never had it easy, even in the mythological world.
That's so true. I mean, a lot of those, you know, goddesses or heroines, you know, have some kind of empowerment story to them. But then there's also these stories, the monster stories, the creature stories, where it just, and then she dies and is killed, you know, and murdered.
Triumphantly, I've got her head. Yes. Well, I hope that she turned a lot of men to stone before she got her head cut off.
Me too.
And that pigeon shit all over them for the rest of eternity.
Exactly. Okay, our final monster we have is the Sphinx. And she is, well, so just before I describe her, so interestingly, the Sphinx throughout history has taken different forms. So like the Sphinx in Egypt, the one that everybody knows about, that giant stone monument, that's actually a male figure. So sometimes it was considered to be male, but often it was considered female. And then this particular story, the Sphinx is a female monster. She has the body of a cat, the wings of a bird, and she has this incredible reservoir of wisdom, and she uses riddles. So she travels to Thebes from foreign lands and devours anyone who cannot correctly answer her riddle. So this is the riddle: what goes on four legs in the morning, 2 feet at noon, and 3 in the evening? Okay, the timer's on. It's final Jeopardy, Leah. Do you know the
answer? I know this answer, though. Do you want me to pretend that I don't?
No, of course not. Tell us.
Na, 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 na. The answer is a man.
Exactly. Can you say why?
Yes. So the four legs. So it's not. This is probably where she got to eat a lot of people. Because the riddle is the morning, noon, and evening. And I think that is probably what throws people for a loop. Whereas morning signifies like the early stages of life. And it's a four legs crawling like a baby. 2 feet at noon is, you know, middle of his life, right? He's an average man walking around. Da, da, da. And then evening signifies the end of life. And it's an old man walking around with a cane.
Yep. So the three legs. Excellent. I'm curious if our listeners knew the answer to that. So in the story, when Oedipus successfully completes her puzzle, the Sphinx is so distraught that she throws herself to her death. And so coming back to Jess Zimmerman, she says that that this is actually the logical conclusion for a culture that punished women for keeping knowledge to themselves. So you got some knowledge. No, you die. Knowledge, of course, as we all know, is power. And that's why throughout history, men have excluded women from access to formal education. So the story of the Sphinx is the story of a woman with questions that men can't answer. She writes, and men didn't take that any better in the 5th century than they do now.
Yeah, no kidding. It's called mansplaining. Oh, you think you know? Well, let me explain it to you in better detail.
Louder. That's also a thing. Why is that a thing? Yeah.
All of our poor villains. And I mean, honestly, they're not villains. They're female monsters. They've always had a place in my heart. I've always sided with the dark.
Yeah, me too. And I know that there are many, many stories, probably similar and, you know, probably with their own fantastical backgrounds from other cultures as well. I just chose these four that kind of have had a big influence in Western culture because of the influence of Greek and Roman myths. But yeah, if you've got some good stories coming from anywhere about monsters, we definitely want to know them.
And we've covered some of these topics when I, you know, forced Carla to immerse herself in all things horror over October. Episode 82, The Bad Bitches of Horror, is actually a really fantastic example of what we talked about, because we went through, you know, we talked about the Alien Queen from Aliens. We talked about Julia from Hellraiser. I can't remember the other ones that we talked about. I was living my glory day that day, though. It was awesome. And then also, too, we see like a lot of these themes and whatnot in episode 85, The Final Girl, with my friend Mary Beth May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you want to hear more of this, like a lot of the same logic that Zimmerman talks about is, you know, we discuss in these episodes, but just in a horror kind of realm.
Yeah, so it's just the modern day retelling of these same stories and these tropes. I mean, what's interesting often, what I remember from those episodes is that they were actually quite subversive, and they were not kind of falling into these very predictable misogynistic tropes that actually in many ways women were transcending that, but not always, right? So we still see in film, in popular culture, these similar kinds of stories for women. And at the same time, there's a movement away from that for women to reclaim their power in this kind of storytelling, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then there's also just another episode to reference. It's not that long ago, we did an episode called Gathering of the Crones. And same kind of thing, fairy tales, hags, witches, crones, and how negative they are. They probably ate children too. And, you know, being old is associated with... with evil, bad, all of those sorts of things. So, you know, there's a pretty comprehensive history.
It's not my fault that baby flesh is just so delicious.
Babies do smell good, but you know, that's about it for me.
It's funny that you say that, you know, because like, there'd be those people that like, you smell so good, I could eat you. And you got to wonder if like that kind of saying comes from stories like this, right? Like of female monstrous women eating children.
Licking our lips.
We need to do a whole episode of just the sound bites of sound effects and dumb noises we make recording.
Not like ASMR or something.
RSW ASMR.
The ASMR version.
just the lip outtakes. Wow. You know what? I'm really proud of us. We made it this far in the episode before going down the shitter with like the regular insanity that we usually kick the show off with. So this is growth on International Women's Day, International Women's Month. We're getting back to the horny on next episode, though, with ye olde sex slang. Oh, God. I can't wait to see what you have dug up for this. It's going to be fucking ridiculous. And I'm probably going to try to at least get one of those words trending on Twitter. Let's be real.
Please.
Anyways, I am Little Leah.
And I'm Carla. We are the Radical Sex Witches, and we will see you next time.
Hello, witchy listener. It's Carla here. If you're feeling disconnected from pleasure and unfulfilled in life, reach out to me and let's connect on a free call. I love helping women like you shift to owning your sexual power, reconnecting to your body, and finding your unique radical sex witch within. Go to carlawainwright.com or find my contact info in the show notes. Let's co-create a life for you that is truly turned on.